This is International Insights, conversations with experts and entrepreneurs on principles of management and leadership, produced by Dr. Joe Shkembri from the Faculty of Economics, Management and Accountancy.
Welcome to International Insights, stories from the real economy. My name is Joe Shkembri. Steve Jobs once said, innovation distinguishes between a leader and a follower. Organizations that are built around innovation lead their sectors and their people. How can an organization come up with groundbreaking innovation in products or processes when it is becoming so hard to even survive in a post-pandemic economy? Our guests today have become experts at innovation. Matthew Bezzina founded his mobility company eCabs on the basis of innovation and transformation. Dr. Leonie Baldacchino is the former director of the Edward de Bono Institute for Creative Thinking and Innovation, and has studied innovation and entrepreneurial opportunity for years. With Matthew and Leonie, we're here to discuss the innovation dilemma. Dr. Leonie Baldacchino, Matthew Bezzina, great to have you here on International Insight. Matthew, everyone knows eCabs as a taxi, a mobility company. Tell us why, you know, the company is essentially, you know, reflective of, you know, innovation and transformation.
I believe the timeline of eCabs can be split into two. Primarily during the first stages of eCabs, during the early years of eCabs between 2010 and 2016, the company was primarily driven by innovation. And when I mention innovation in terms of the way we used technology in order to scale and grow the company to a level which the industry, the sector, never experienced at the time. The way we implemented marketing campaigns in order to be able to identify with cohorts of customers and stakeholders which throughout the previous years never identified with the industry in any way, shape or form. And the third point, which obviously innovation played a massive role, was the way we challenged a previously unassailable industry sector, where at that time the legacy operators, you know, had regulatory capture
exactly
on the industry. Yeah. And we slowly created an environment, both on a legal level and even on an employment level, that nowadays, 12 years down the line, we have a fully fledged sector, which is fully liberalized and growing. And not only having eCabs operating in the industry, but you have the two biggest global players also
present
in the island. That's the first 6 years. The second 6 years were mostly driven by transformation.
Right.
And when I mentioned transformation, eCabs before was literally a fleet company.
Okay.
And it used to use third-party technology to run and grow, of which we used to build on. From 2016 onwards, we took a conscious decision to start developing and building our own IP.
Okay.
Why? Because at that time we realized that we are fighting competing on a global level in terms of customer expectations and driver expectations. And in order to be able to compete on a global level, you need the right technology. So what started the team? With a team of three developers. Today it's a team of 65 plus developers.
65 for your company only?
Which is set to double.
Okay.
In the next year. The team is going to double and grow, obviously, because it falls in line with our internationalization efforts.
Exactly, and we're going to be talking a bit about that as well. So, of course, it's probably a misconception to think of eCabs as just a taxi company, but more there's a lot of technology inbuilt.
Primarily nowadays, it is a technology company where it owns the IP of the platform. But then it was also the fact that it's a B2C service.
Exactly.
It's a consumer service. Mm. Automatically, people associate eCabs with the fleet company, which it used to be. In fact, mm-hmm. the Black Cab company was the name that put eCabs on the map.
Okay.
Nowadays, that we became a victim of our own success.
Exactly.
Because to detach ourselves from the successes of the past, it takes time, but gradually the perceptions are changing.
Absolutely. It's great, and we're going to be talking about your internationalization kind of aspirations as we go along. I wanted to introduce Leoni on this one specifically. Why is it important for companies when thinking of going international to have an innovation, to have something which is, you know, highly kind of innovative in the product or process?
Okay, I think taking a step back, we need to clarify that innovation is important not just to internationalize, but for competing even locally, right? And linking on to what Matthew was saying, you emphasized quite a lot the technological aspect of innovation, but I think it's also important to clarify that although there is a lot of innovation in technology, there is innovation in various other functions.
Exactly.
Various
technological. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So innovation essentially comes out of creativity, out of creative ideas. And many people associate creativity with the arts, and innovation with technology, but in really and truly, you can have both creativity and innovation in general. So it is important to have innovation and creativity, of course, because you can't have innovation without the creative ideas that feed into that innovation in order to internationalize. Because ultimately, what you're looking for is the possibility of offering a value proposition that is going to be attractive in a new market, right? And a good value proposition is one that is offering something that is different from, but also better than, what is already available on that market. Mm-hmm. Now you could be having a new product entering a new market. Mm-hmm. But you could have an existing product here that you're going to try to enter a new market.
Exactly.
You could also have an existing market with a new product, mm-hmm. or the least innovative, of course, is having an existing product and
an existing market. Exactly.
In which case, there mm-hmm. is limited innovation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But research has indicated that having an innovation and good value proposition is very important to internationalize and to break into new markets successfully.
Because innovation in this sense is tied to a value proposition, which is hopefully a bit unique. Matthew, in your kind of plans to internationalize, you know, how has the experience been so far? That's the first thing I want to ask.
I think considering that we haven't really started marketing the eCabs platform abroad, organically, the feedback has been extremely positive.
Right.
And the reasons are simple. One, you have a platform which has been built on 12 years of operational experience. And especially over the past 5-6 years, a platform that has been competing, as previously mentioned, okay. with international giants.
Yes, yes.
And as they say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So the fact that eCabs is still managing to maintain and even grow market share
right.
in a very, very versatile market,
mm-hmm.
and whilst competing with platforms that are funded well, I think that is a testament of the platform and the technology that we've also we've built. Secondly, and this is a point which few manage to visualize, is the eCabs platform is a platform which is very comprehensive in the way bookings are managed.
All right. Okay.
So we are one of the few platforms globally, especially in Europe, where we process bookings coming from different channels,
okay.
offline and online. So online channels are the app, the website, and API connectivity. Offline is when you book over the phone or you actually go into a taxi booth or an office. The fact that over the past 12 years we've optimized a platform, built a platform that can manage all these booking processes effectively makes the platform
right.
extremely, extremely attractive to different territories, irrespective on the size,
okay.
the city size, the population size, mm-hmm. and the demographics.
Okay.
So the European offline market still accounts for 45% of the
general mobility market, I guess. Okay.
You have secondary and tertiary cities where demographically you have customer cohorts which prefer to call.
Okay.
So as a platform, we've never shied away from building technology which still
for which there is no demand as yet. Is that
there is demand?
Okay.
So my grandmother, mobility, it's
still a requirement.
Mobility is a need, and it slices through the different age groups,
generation,
and demographics.
Yeah.
So you have certain age groups which prefer who book by phone.
Yeah.
So when it comes to internationalization, our USP is going to be, listen, this is a platform that can easily provide a good service and meet the expectations of a Gen Z.
Okay.
But it also manages and meets the demands of a Gen Alpha or a boomer.
Exactly.
Sounds paradoxical, really, you know, but there is also this interesting slant to it, that sometimes you need to be innovative in order to address a traditional need.
Absolutely.
That many innovators sometimes tend to forget.
But what's also interesting from what Matthew is saying is that the kind of the rivalry locally, you know, and all this competition kind of spurs innovation. No, Leonie, what do you think? This is normal in companies kind of coming up with innovations that are relevant for markets.
Well, there is always competition, especially in a small island like ours. It's a very competitive market, and innovation is, I think, one of the key elements that enables a company to survive and to prosper. Case in point. I think what Matthew also did with ECABS is that they used their experience in Malta to kind of use it as a test bed.
Exactly. Correct.
Almost.
So it wasn't an R&D process. It was really, like you said, operating and learning from that operation to kind of build an innovation.
And when you're competing with the best, automatically all the stakeholders need to elevate to meet those expectations.
Yeah. So there's like an ecosystem level change which happened in the
sector. Playing in the Champions League.
Exactly, playing in the Champions League. And that means that's good for innovation, Matthew?
Extremely.
Okay.
Extremely healthy. It's painful in the short term.
Okay.
But extremely valuable in the medium to long term.
Right. Why? Because these people have high expectations. They're just aggressive competitors.
Otherwise, it's very easy to be complacent, right?
Exactly.
Comfort.
And innovation is kind of, you know, the other
innovation
end.
Is pushing oneself, pushing one's company out of its comfort zone. You need to find new ways of doing things. There's a risk involved, because no matter how much market research you carry out, you never quite know whether something is really going to work or not before you launch it, before you go to market with
it.
So it's, you know, it's not comfortable.
Yeah, it's not. The parameters aren't set and you just follow a recipe.
And this applies not only to in the business world, it applies to everything.
Yeah.
There's growth when there's pain.
Absolutely. No.
And you're measuring up with the best.
Exactly. Now, it's really, really interesting, however, that when you have a situation where there's a lot of competition, a lot of big companies, like you said, well-funded companies, I guess they have their own, you know, innovative technologies themselves, that puts you in a better position, if you like, because you're under pressure, and therefore you can come up with innovations kind of more. Leonie doesn't agree sometimes.
It depends, obviously.
Okay.
It depends on how entrepreneurial the individual and the company is. So we're talking about innovation here, but actually in innovativeness, which is the company's willingness to engage in innovation, is one dimension of what we refer to as entrepreneurial orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other dimensions, including proactiveness, for example.
Yeah.
So it's not all about simply thinking about how is one going to come up with new products, new services, new ways of doing things, because one could do that reactively.
Right.
If a company is entrepreneurially oriented, they would do that proactively.
Okay.
Right? There is also a risk-taking element in it.
Yeah.
How willing is the company
to
take risks?
Mm-hmm.
How willing is the company to engage in competition?
Okay.
So competitive aggressiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So these are all different elements that fit into each other.
Leonie, is this normal to have a company with a technological innovation like ECABS, you know, adopting a general entrepreneurial orientation, kind of with some direction, but yet being a bit open to improvise?
Yes, one has to be flexible. It's it's good to have a plan, it's good to have a strategy,
right.
One has to know the market that one is attempting to penetrate, but ultimately there has to be an element of flexibility and alertness.
Alertness, okay, that's an interesting one in innovation, no?
In innovation and in, as we say, in entrepreneurship, in opportunity identification or in new venture ideation. This is a cognitive process that can take place either at a conscious, deliberate level. So Matthew said we are very cognizant of, right? They are deliberately carrying out the research, making sure that they are the right partners and so on and so forth. But there is also an element of non-conscious, automatic recognition
Explain
of opportunities.
That a bit to us.
So some people are naturally in tune to what is happening in the environment, right? So there's a lot of literature, for example, on this notion of entrepreneurial alertness. They notice subconsciously when things are changing, when new needs are emerging, when new opportunities are taking shape. Other people do it in a much more deliberate manner.
Right.
But actually, the best entrepreneurs are able to be what we call cognitively versatile, in the sense that they use both their non-conscious intuitive processes, automatic processes, but also their deliberate decision-making, their deliberate analysis.
Okay.
Because they need to complement each other. The two processes need to complement each other.
Yeah.
So it's important also for entrepreneurs to realize that there are two ways of identifying opportunities and also to make decisions regarding which opportunities to exploit.
Yeah. And which and others to ignore or which signals
both,
to...
Both need to be employed in tandem, so to speak.
Okay.
Now, in terms of how does one become more cognitively versatile, I did say that some people are naturally more in tune or naturally more alert. But it's good to note that when one repeats an action deliberately, one is automatically internalizing that process.
Becoming a bit of a habit.
Yes, it becomes a habit. Take driving, for example. When people are, when your drivers are obtaining their license, they have to be very focused, very concentrated on exactly what they need to do.
Yeah.
Eventually, it becomes internalized. It becomes second nature. This is exactly the same thing with identifying opportunities, making decisions, and so on.
So you become good at it because...
So initially, you practice.
Okay.
And there are certain exercises or certain workshops that we like to carry out with our students to help them deliberately practice these cognitive processes, right? The more they do it, the more internalized they become. So the better they become at automatically then recognizing opportunities.
Yeah.
Once then an opportunity is automatically identified or deliberately identified, again, one needs to bring in the deliberate analysis in order to make sure that one is...
To kind of validate the ideas and all that. It seems to be very kind of logical and linear, perhaps.
No,
I'm not sure.
It's not linear at all, actually. It seems more messy than that, no? Yes, yes.
And in fact, I wanted to ask, how does a company, you know, interested in making innovation central to what they do, you know, create the right structures in place? You can have some exercises of creativity, okay, but to have this balance between something structured, something which is completely intuitive on a daily basis.
So the practice is important, first of all, to nurture one's creativity. One needs to practice...
On an individual level, you mean?
On an individual level. But then once one is a member of an organization, there does need to be a system in place. The culture and the climate need to be conducive to creativity and innovation.
Okay.
For example, there needs to be top-down support. So the boss has to be, you know, openly supportive of creative ideas of innovation that are in line with the company's vision and strategy, of course. There needs to be an element of allowing some risk-taking and experimentation, again, in line with the strategy of the company. So if one is trying to come up with new ideas in relation to a particular target, right, there needs to be an element of risk-taking because, as I said before, there are no guarantees in innovation. Along with that comes trust.
Okay.
So the employees, the members of the team, need to be able to trust one another and trust the boss or the bosses that if they make a mistake, not through through not being careful enough, you know.
Trying something that did not work.
Exactly, that doesn't work. You know, they can't be kind of concerned that...
They're going to be punished for it.
They're going to be punished or fired or whatever. There also needs to be financial commitment.
Yeah.
Because these things cost money.
Exactly.
And I think one last thing that I'd like to point out in this case is that structure is not necessarily a bad thing for innovation.
That's interesting.
Actually, having a good innovation management structure whereby everybody in the organization knows what they should do if they get an idea and what needs to be done if an idea is proposed that is actually very conducive to innovation, because otherwise, you know, I'm a member of a team and I get an idea and I don't know who should I tell. Should I tell the person sitting next to me at the next desk? Should I go?
So kind of there's a structure and there's a way and the fora where it's safe enough to do these kind of things.
Exactly.
And you've mentioned a lot of things which are really interesting. They really seem to be logical and they work well together. Matt, I'm not sure if in a company that's competing every day, things are so, you know, happy.
Quite correct the way it was mentioned. So in our case, the way we are tackling our internationalization efforts in terms of human resources, and obviously in order to spur innovation, is by one, making sure that we organically grow internal resources. So
right.
you have many cases of individuals who used to work in the operations team or used to work as drivers,
okay.
and nowadays they form part of the product team.
Okay, okay. So because they have enough knowledge and they can
on the field.
Okay, yeah.
That's important.
So when it comes to designing products, mm-hmm. the best product owners and designers and business analysts are those that have experienced
have been doing the
product themselves. So if you're, you know, testing the UX UI of a driver's app or mm-hmm. a new feature of a driver's app, mm-hmm. having experience working day and night as a driver would definitely add more value.
Exactly.
And the fact that we have over 12 years of experience, operational experience, in a very, very versatile market. We've managed to, I've identified a lot of individuals, and today, one of my proudest moments, seeing someone who's been working with ECABS for 10, 11 years, and today he's leading a product team.
Okay, okay.
Obviously, he went through various training courses and studies.
Exactly. So there's a structure,
an MBA, mm-hmm. and graduated lately. So, but then obviously we do understand that you need also external resources.
Okay.
External resources who have experience working in the mobility and ride-hailing industries, and preferably with global players.
All right.
And those two elements will create the synergy that you need in order to continue innovating and transforming.
Anyway, what do you think? People are different, you know, we try to nurture people to be creative, but I'm sure there are.
For sure. You have to understand how people in your team tick.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are different people who are motivated by different things, so that is one key element that one needs to understand. How do you motivate people to come up with ideas?
Yeah.
You know, is it simply a financial thing, or are they motivated by other things as well? So I could go into a whole theoretical discussion about intrinsic versus extrinsic innovation and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Matthew has said enough about that topic. But really and truly, I think everybody wants to see that they can make a difference in the place of work.
Okay, and contribute. Mm-hmm.
So if you can understand what is going to motivate that person to propose good ideas,
mm-hmm.
and that if they are really good ideas and they are aligned and that, you know, the financial resources are available, they can see them put into
exactly.
practice.
That's what
I think. That in itself is then going to be a motivator
for others
follow-ups
to follow, because people imitate each other.
Yes, and of course different people have to be involved in the process. Some people are good with coming up with ideas. Other people are good with developing those ideas and implementing
exactly.
them. So even if you think that a reward structure is important,
okay.
You need to be very careful as to who you are going to reward.
Yeah.
Because if you're only rewarding the originator of the idea and you're forgetting everyone else, then it's going to be frustrating for everybody else who's been involved.
Yeah. And everyone becomes much more egoistic and not sharing, for example.
Yes. So this is all within the innovation management structure that I mentioned earlier.
Which seems to be kind of, you know, much more kind of structured than we perhaps, you know, thought before. Because we're running a bit out of time, I'd like you to reflect a little bit and share perhaps with us and with people listening, you know, who are interested in, you know, international business or going international with their products or services, you know, a couple of key points that they should keep in mind in terms of, you know, innovation and creativity and coming up with new things. Whoever wants to start.
Matthew?
Clearly, patience.
Okay.
I think it's a virtue which you need to apply, because no matter how many plans you make, especially in the world which we're living, things are becoming and will continue becoming very, very volatile. Surrounding yourself with people who are better than you.
Okay.
And not being afraid.
Exactly.
To do so. Laser focus.
Okay.
Over the past 12 years, I had many opportunities to venture out into new businesses,
Yes.
And I call it the iceberg effect. So during the first 6 years of ECABS, when there was a lot of innovation, and every month it was thrilling because there's new products being deployed, new marketing campaigns being, new market share being created. That was really the period of transformation. Was a period of where you had to literally focus.
Yes. And like consolidate. Yeah.
And you'll have a lot of opportunities which you have to sideline in order to continue working on your goal. And the last point, which I think is very pertinent, is that there's a limit to how much you can bootstrap the growth of a company.
Okay.
Once you reach a point where you can't scale and grow, especially, you know, to meet the demand of the company, you immediately need to find finance options or investors.
Absolutely. Great. Words of wisdom. Leonie.
Add on to what Matthew said, in addition to patience, I think we also need to mention resilience.
Okay.
Because it's not an easy process and things will go wrong, obstacles will be encountered. So resilience has to be there in order to, you know, keep giving you that that drive to keep pursuing your goal. I think it's also important not to fall in love with one's idea.
Okay.
Many entrepreneurs tend to do that. They have an idea. They think it's the greatest thing to be offered to humankind. But there does need to be an element of market research, feasibility analysis, and so on, especially if one is venturing into an international market that is not as familiar as one's local market. And of course, understanding your market, knowing your market, and perhaps if one would like to learn more about innovation and internationalization, we at the Edward de Bono Institute offer a number of courses on creativity, innovation, and entrepreneurship. And in recent years, we were involved in an Erasmus Plus project called DIFMI, Digital Internationalization and Financial Literacy for micro entrepreneurs. And we have a number of online modules on the topic. So if anybody would like to follow up,
That's
they are all available for free online.
Fantastic. Leonie, Matthew, thank you for giving us your insight on the innovation imperative.
In this series, we talk to experts and entrepreneurs on leadership and management issues. We have episodes on emerging out of a crisis, driving innovation, the digital imperative, attracting talent, seizing key opportunities, and the leadership lessons we can learn from the world of sport. The series also includes 4 interviews with international entrepreneurs based in Malta. International Insights was originally recorded for Trade Malta and made possible thanks to HSBC.